This is that other sports shit. Let's go. Ladies and gentlemen, it is another beautiful Wednesday morning here in Oregon. And in Fresno, I don't know what the weather is, but I'm guessing it's still gorgeous. And when I mean gorgeous here, Oregon-wise, I mean it's very gray, it's very dark, it's very cloudy, it's very rainy.
Same here, dude.
See, look at that, man. That's the way it is, though, out here on the Great West Coast. Folks, we are back with another edition of That Other Sports Show. I just want to kick off this part by saying we always give thanks to the listeners, but the uptick in especially the Spotify listens has been exponential over the last few weeks. And just the last episode itself, I think, did triple the numbers from the week before. So whatever it is that's causing you to go listen, thank you so much for doing so. And Spotify has been outdoing you, Apple. Apple Podcasts, you are trending now, my friend. We have a trending up and a trending down situation right now. Spotify Podcast trending up. But
I was not ready for this news.
No,
this breaking news.
Spotify listeners, thank you. And of course, Apple Podcast listeners, and of course, the Spotify Podcast listeners who actually just listen via the link. Thank you. And everybody else involved. Quick shout out to my boy Shay Rollins, Chef Shay Rollins, right? So
hashtag Hornt,
Team Hornt up in this house, man. It's up in there. So I just want to say that I haven't really talked to Shay in a while. Okay. It's been a minute, few random, tweets back and forth. Had a great conversation with him last night. And the dude is doing absolutely amazing things. If you go look on his Twitter page, actually, you'll see that he's actually now in the gym trying to bust his ass.
He's getting chubby.
He's moving. He's trying to like lose it all. He says he wants the better dad body. You know what I mean? So I just want to say shout out to Shay. Whether you hear it enough or not, buddy, we love you and we miss you. And please, whenever, reach out. But I am so, so happy to hear that you're doing really, really well. And to everybody else out there, all of our other homies, Chris and Justin and just everybody, obviously we love you guys too. So today we are going to recap UFC 297, which in my opinion was absolutely extremely slow. We will recap some of the fights, the things that stuck out to us. We also will recap the AFC and the NFC divisional games. I'm super sad. I'm super depressed. Actually, I'm feeling a lot better. And according to my tweets, if you pay attention, in the past, they would have been much more doom and gloom. I definitely have tried to turn that corner to be Mr. Positivity, even on a sour note. So I've tried really hard. It's been difficult, but I'm trying to throw that positivity at you, So without further ado, let me bring in my boy, my homie, my guy, my brother, Mr. Jason Valdez.
Jesse, I love you as always, brother. From another mother, a few things. We want to do a lot of house cleaning here. And let me start with Shay Rollins. Shay is incredible at sharing Instagram videos with me via DM. And I want to say 9 out of 10 of them are pretty prejudiced. So that's good stuff. a lot of borderline stuff. Some of the stuff he sends me, I'm like, how do they get away with this on Instagram? Because I thought this place was like a lefty liberal type of site. But shout out to Shay. And, it's good to see he's doing better. Shout out to my boy Brian Black.
Yes.
Shout out to Fat Boy Fadeaway Sports. Shout out to Tyler. Shout out to Brian. Let's get the shout outs out of the way early. Shout out to Variety Sports. I'm a little upset because we didn't get put in that initial loop of congratulatory people who blew up their numbers. Because I'm going to keep it real with you. I think we had a strong part of blowing them numbers up. Maybe I'm blowing myself up here And Jess, if you want to edit this out, go right ahead and post.
I ain't editing shit.
Am I wrong?
No, and you know what? I'm going to, you know what? So,
where's the line?
According to Tyler, our boy Tyler, from Fat Boy Fadeaway, and amongst other, he does a lot of stuff over there for Variety. I should be, if all goes well, I should be a guest spot on their show tomorrow night. And I'm going to,
are you going to do the video?
I don't know. I don't know. I'll do the video if they want me to, but
I think you got to show, I think you got to be on video. You got to show your gorgeous face. If we go on there with a tank top,
dude, I know I'm going straight Pat McAfee if it happens.
Yes. Yes. No, but a thinner tank top.
Sleeveless.
Thinner. Yeah. Thinner tank top.
Yes.
Thinner tank top. That you get. He's.
I'm gonna. Veins are gonna pop.
Yes.
Yes. It's happening.
Do like you know when Chris Jericho before Chris Jericho met Vince McMahon for the first time, he made sure to put on shoes that made him a little bit taller, and he did a bunch of push-ups and curls with bands because he wanted his shit to pop that first impression, right? So when the Variety Sports Multiverse once again opens and you show up over there, you've got to really represent, because we're always talking about how we're one of the strongest podcasts in all of sports, which I still stand on business when we talk about that.
100%.
But so the only way to back that up is to show up on there with a fucking spaghetti string tank top. I'm talking gold gym level. Like you really got to pop the shoulders. You got to have that Brock Lesnar, like that bump, you know, on top of a bump. Like do a bunch of upright rows before you.
Ooh, I got some bands. I got some really good bands for Christmas too. So I'm gonna pump that shit up.
Hooked you up.
I'm gonna pump it up, and then what's gonna happen is I'm gonna go on there and I'm gonna tell them like, "Hey boys, I feel a little discrepancy in the numbers. What's going on? Like, are we Connecticut over here? Like, what's going on? Are we miscounting votes? Listen, are we Colorado? What's happening?
We are far from small time. I mean, let's keep it real here. And I also think, Jess, when you pop on there and you got the shoulders pop in, I think you've got to have like one of those cups that everybody drinks out of now, a Stanley cup.
Stanley cup.
Yeah. So just show up on there just looking jacked as fuck with a Stanley cup. I like it.
Just grab a Stanley cup and just go to town.
Pulling that water.
Just like,
or bang. You know, like or halfway, bang. Through, ooh.
Halfway through, I'm pouring the water on my head and like.
Yeah. Just like, just squirting it all over your face. Hey, whatever you do, Jess, don't get really drunk right before and then call and then say you can't come on. Like, don't do that.
I won't do that.
I'm not saying that any of their people have done that to our
show. No,
we don't put people on blast like that, right?
No, we don't do that. Not here.
We don't do that here.
Not here. Not on.
Jess, we're gonna talk Royal Rumble to start. We're gonna talk some UFC, but as you mentioned, the card was kind of mama mid, and it's tough because let's keep it real here. Once again, we've got that. We had the NFC. What was it? Divisional.
The divisional
was really good. Like you've got Packers Niners, which got really good late into the fourth quarter. And we will talk about that. Trust me. But that shit took precedence over the UFC. Like, I'm sorry, but the you know, unless you got two TVs in your living room, which I do not. Plus, I had a house full of people. They wanted to watch football. They wanted to watch football. So unfortunately, the UFC kind of got put on the back burner there. But Jess, let's open it up. Let's open the can up here. We're going to start with 2024. We promised we would give the people what they want. We promised we would talk more pro wrestling. The Royal Rumble is here. We're not going to talk about the WWE moving Raw to USA Network and how they just got $5 billion. We're not educated enough to talk about that. We're going to keep it numbskull. Jess, there's a lot of participants in the Royal Rumble, but I feel like there's usually a crowd of four or five that you know have a strong possibility of winning. I might even pull up the Vegas odds real quick.
That's a good one.
Jess, who you got?
So I fought back and forth, right? Because I really want to go Cody Rhodes. I really think that Cody, you know, it's his time. Like, you know, the theme song, man. I think that just visually looking, Cody Rhodes is the initial, you know, you would think he's the initial guy he's going to win. But I have a black, I have a dark horse. My dark horse is Gunther.
Oh, I love that.
My dark horse is Gunther. Now, every now and then, like, right, like every 3 years, the Royal Rumble turns into a shit show, and who the obvious become the inobvious. And then the one guy or that one gal that you had no idea is going to somehow pop in and win that thing. And then becomes like a different type of storyline afterwards leading up to WrestleMania, which is always the fun part. I could see a Gunther storyline, you know, where maybe he pulls a little cheating in the Rumble, dumps Cody. You know what I mean? Maybe it even ends up being Gunther and Punk, right? And then there's a little...
I want to give you a real quick guess. Gunther coming in at a +600. He is fourth on the list of implied probability to win.
See? I'm telling you. And I get there's storylines to be made with Gunther. I know that he had the walk-in with Seth Rollins not too long ago talking about, hey, Seth, you know, you're not going to drop the belt. Like
you that was Monday night. It was really good.
Yeah, you and I, you know, we're going to go toe-to-toe. I'm going to become the world heavyweight champion. And here's the thing. Obviously, we know that Seth is hurt. He's going to be out for a while, so WrestleMania is probably not in his cards. I know he talks about it, but, you know, that's all scripted speech, right? He's supposed to make people feel good about it. Seth Rollins is probably not going to be much of WrestleMania in those plans, but you need to have that one or two extra, you know, up-and-comers, right? And kind of give them their shot. And Gunther, to me, plays the best part.
You're always going to have that moment where it's the last four guys, and there's that surprise guy where it's like, oh, it's Kevin Owens. Oh, it's Drew McIntyre. But let me throw probabilities at you, and then I'm going to give you the final six that they have here. And this is the old action sports gambling on pro wrestling. All right, Jess.
All right, let's do it.
+2,000 and a 4.76% chance of winning the Royal Rumble, Drew McIntyre. All right. There's a handful of 6.67s in here. The one that I believe is the most interesting is Sami Zayn at a +1,400. Here are our top five, Jess. Are you ready?
Yes, let's hear the top five.
Two, four, six. I'm sorry, top six. Randy Orton, six, +1,000. Implied probability, 9%,
9.09.
L.A. Knight, +700 at a 12.5% probability. As I mentioned, Gunther, a.k.a. Walter, at a +600, 14.29%. That's a pretty decent number. This is a very weird one to me. The Rock at a +400 and a 20% implied probability.
I swear
Rock
to God, they do this.
Rock shows
they
up number 30.
Rating bumps.
I'm gonna suggest, let's go. Rock shows up number 30, throws everybody out, wins the Royal Rumble.
No, not even. Even if he shows up, even if he shows up number two, he ain't throwing nobody out.
Number 30. He shows up number 30. There's like four or five guys left.
He can show up. He can show up whatever. It don't matter. I love the nostalgia of it, right? Like Rock fans and everything. I love it, right? But they do this all the time where they'll throw in a, you know, a Billy Gunn or a, you know, whoever, right? Somebody will run in and they'll be like, yeah, big boss man coming running out from the dead.
Hell,
you know?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, like, he'll throw out one or two guys. It'll be kind of cool, nostalgic. Everybody gets the feels. And then the next thing you know, he gets clotheslined over the top.
I'm so excited to see the Godfather with the hose on Saturday. That I always pop for that one. Number two, Jess. And, I mean, there's only two guys left. So this is where, to me, it gets really interesting. So two, Cody Rhodes at a +200 and a 33.33% to win, which just leaves one person left. Fucking CM Punk at a -227.
Holy shit.
And an implied probability to win at 69.44%. They have this motherfucker pretty much booked to win.
I can't believe they have odds like that. Like, typically, Vegas especially would want odds to be closer. That doesn't do shit for booking.
Well, I think if you're going to be ballsy, you're going to throw $100 on LeBronc or $100 on Walter.
I'll throw $100 on Gunther.
It doesn't sound like the worst idea. Do you remember he had an unbelievable showing at last year's Royal Rumble where everybody was like, Walter's in shape. He's lasted like 20 dudes. I'm pretty sure, and I could be wrong, I'm pretty sure he was the last dude in there with
Didn't COVID. He set a record for most outs in the Royal Rumble?
He did something ridiculous.
There was a record that he had too. So it's not out of the world of, you know, like,
I don't think it could
not happen that, you know, he wins.
Why can't he be the last guy in? Go,
and let's face it,
I want to wrestle Seth.
Let's face it. So the WWE has a problem, kind of like the UFC has a problem with no mega stars, right? In the UFC, like in the WWE, they have mega stars, but everyone's like a half in, half out face heel. We don't have your legitimate heel. We don't have your baby face or big heel.
Yeah,
we don't have your baby face Hogan's. You know what I mean? We don't have your heel Takers. You know,
Cody's the modern day Hogan.
Cody ain't.
You don't think so?
No, not even.
Brother,
not
you got to go to an event. See how
not even close. I know that he gets the pop, and I know that the fans love the music, and I know that I'm gonna be straight up right now. I don't think that he's near the talent that people give him credit for.
Oh wow.
There's a reason.
You're hotter than a pistol right now.
There is a reason, my friend, that Cody has been passed around like the backseat girlfriend. You know, that is a fact. His mic skills lack because of the lisp. His ring skills lack because he's not as big and strong as, say, a Roman Reigns or somebody else. And his in-character personality is just semi-dry. Like, I get what he's aiming for, and I don't dislike Cody. I just don't see anything that separates him from the next big guy, you know, below him. I don't.
Wow. A lot of what you said is fair, and I think that I can even agree with some of it, but I hate to do the, you haven't been in the arena in a while.
I haven't,
but
so I don't know.
When you walk into that arena and you see, first of all, the amount of merch that Cody Rhodes is moving, the amount of shirts that he wears. Jeff, I was in line to buy merch at a WWE event a few months ago, and the amount of people that were buying $250 signed weight belts. And then the amount of kids that were buying the little $25 foam weight belts was mind-blowing. The pop that he got was just as big as Seth Franklin Rollins. And I mean, he was fucking over, Jess. The heat during his match. Now, he wrestled Dom, so it was one of those, like, mega heat just from the match type of things, but it was he moved the needle, Jess. I think you watch Raw, you see the reaction he gets when he comes out. It's the song thing I get because they do it with Seth, so it just seems to resonate more. But
well, remember Shinsuke too, like when Shinsuke would come out, they play the music and everybody's doing the, you know, the
air guitar,
the chorus, and
whoa,
yeah,
whoa, away.
Look, I'm not saying that Cody is like, you know, he's a generational guy, right? You know, father, he's, you know, he's had like his brother, like it's, I get it. I'm just saying that he lacks, to me, okay, he lacks that Stone Cold personality. Stone Cold Steve Austin had like his own thing. Like, it hadn't been done yet, right?
So you're basically going, and I'm not saying this is an unfair comparison, because because we're going there, but you're doing Mount Rushmore guys. And is he bigger than a Stone Cold? Is he bigger than The Rock? Is he bigger than John Cena? Is he bigger than Hogan? That's fair. If you're doing the height of that, that's fair. That is fair.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm not in any way trying to slander Cody.
You're kind of picking on him. I want to agree with you here as well. His ring work, his best ring work isn't necessarily my flavor.
Yeah.
Let me say it like that. It's pretty basic.
Well, and that, you know, and his finishing move, I think, has been 30 other people's finishing moves.
That's fair. So is what guy's going with the DDT? But I want to keep
John Moxley's version better.
So give me your winner. Who do you think wins the Royal Rumble?
I hate to say it, but I am going to agree with Vegas. I know I've read some reports about Cody. I don't know if they're true, but there's people saying that Trips and Vince have had conversations with Cody talking about, hey, this isn't the year that you finish, you know, the story, right? I don't know if these are true, and these could be written by a bunch of, you know, 350-pound dudes in their mom's basement. I don't know. But I'm just saying, if there's any truth to that being told, it really goes to show that they have something else planned for Cody, and that they're going to try a mega push with Punk. And you can't wait, because the dude's not getting any younger. You got to do it now. Now's the time. I think Punk somehow finds a way to win the Royal Rumble.
Oh, God. I want to agree with you so bad, but I'm not. I think Cody's going to win it again. I think we're going to get Cody back-to-back winning. I agree with you with the Punk thing, and I would not be surprised if Walter, and I would not be surprised if Punk won the Royal Rumble. Because right now with Punk, you do have that lightning in a bottle.
You got to hit.
With, on top of that, what's the true shelf life before he starts going back to the old CM Punk ways? And we talked about this when he came back to the WWE.
Yeah.
At some point here, he's going to start doing that doesn't work for me, brother. At some point, he's going to start disagreeing with the booking and disagreeing with his character. And that's when he's been known to take his ball and go home. And we've only heard this on every promo cut on him in the last fucking 4 months. So, if not longer. So I'm going to go Cody. I think we're still going to get Cody versus
Roman. Give me your top three. Give me your top three real quick.
I think we just nailed them.
You got Cody.
I think you and I have the same top three. I think Cody.
Okay, I think so. We're saying somewhere between Cody, Gunther, and Punk. One of those three.
My last four are going to be Cody, Punk, Walter, and I want to say McIntyre.
You said Sami Zayn. Yeah, that resonated a bit because he was super huge last year, had the whole bloodline thing.
Main evented WrestleMania Night 1?
Yeah, I'm not saying he's going to win, and I don't even think of him as a dark horse. But in that last four, that final four, I could definitely see Sami Zayn being in there with Walter and Punk and Rhodes.
All right, Jess, let's keep it moving. We've got the UFC here that we've already picked on a little bit, like a scab. As I mentioned it to Jess. I mentioned it a little bit here in the pre-show. I was not able to watch all these fights. I was watching the
Niners Packers.
Which was really good.
Come on, like one of the best playoff games I've seen in a while.
It's impossible for me to comment on. Oh, I did watch Allen versus Evalev. I thought that fight was good. I didn't think it was great. I thought that it was pretty much what we thought it would be, Jess. Yeah. Evalev worked the ground and was the better grappler. Allen was the better striker, but he got caught, and I think he got hurt at some point in the second or third round with the strike, because they were just kind of, I don't want to say flailing strikes away, or maybe Allen wasn't respecting Evalev striking, but I think Evalev caught him at some point, and he wobbled him a little bit. But Evalev won. Let's see what happens with him next. I've still got some stake in Allen, but clearly when you get to that top level, Jess, you got to be able to grapple. Chris Curtis, Marc-Andre Barrial. I heard some people – did some people say that this was controversial? I watched some majority of this fight. I thought Curtis did enough to win. Magni Melo, Jess,
This was a very surprising fight. I believe you and I both picked Melo.
Magni. No, we picked Magni.
Did we pick Magni?
We picked both of us. Oh, okay. Picked Magni. We both like Magni.
Oh, that's right. I talked a good game about Melo and then
Wiry.
Okay. That's right.
Magni, dude, Magni used his wiry skills to put Malone on his back.
He was seconds away from losing. I agree. That finish came. that finish came within seconds or like a minute at least, like at the most.
4:45 round three.
Before the damn fight was over, he was going to lose a unanimous decision before he got that KO.
Now, Malat got caught. He got caught late. And yeah. Was just a weird fight. These fights kind of went the way that we thought that they would with regards to the pace, with regards to the style matchups and how they would wash. So to me, it was not that surprising. Pennington versus Bueno Silva. Jess, you took Pennington. You were all in. I took Bueno Silva. I was all in. I thought she would be possibly one of the rising stars of this division, and boy, did she show up and absolutely do nothing. real throwback Damian Maya type fight. Like, just kept walking into a jab. Like, just kept walking into a jab, walking into a jab. It was almost like there was, you know, reminds me of the old Ronda Rousey head movement, head movement, head movement. Like, there was no movement of the... Where it did do you guys?
It's strange though, because her last couple fights, she showed some striking skills,
but the striking was really to set up the takedowns.
Well, yeah, but I mean, just like Maya, when Maya's striking got better, then people had to fear, you know, the strikes setting up the takedown or actually getting caught. Bueno Silva actually showed in a couple of fights that she can put some leather on folks, but this fight was just super weird. It was like she
reverted just grinding
way
around.
Back.
The same shit that Bueno Silva was talking shit about, which is your fights are boring and I fall asleep during them, was how she got beat. Cause she
it's
just
how she fought, man.
She just yeah. Hey, listen.
Fuck.
That's a great point. That's a she wasn't coming out here like no Anderson Silva or motherfucking Conor McGregor flashing some shit and keeping your eyes tuned to the TV and going like, wow, she's amazing. Like, I had a house full of people that were just kind of in random conversations and steering their energy away from the fight because it wasn't that great. There was a moment, I believe, in the fourth round where Myra had her deep in a choke. She had a deep submission. And it just felt like everyone in the room went, this is it. She's either going to catch her here or she's going to gas out. And then that's going to be the difference in the fight. And it felt like that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there was a point in time when, because I had said in the preview show, Pennington's going to be the bigger, stronger fighter. She's going to push her weight around. She definitely has the better striking skills, and she brought all that, right? I think she just started wearing Bueno Silva down, and then it became a point where Pennington got tired of being the aggressor, and so she slowed her pace down. So it was... Either way, it was not the prettiest fight. The women's divisions, all the women's divisions, and we can bring up Kayla Harrison in a minute if you want to, but like the women's divisions need a shakeup. Like, oh, we don't have the roses. You know what I mean? We don't have the Giannas. We don't have the Giana champions. Well, we don't have those right now.
Let me say this
in the women's divisions.
I think they're in a really in a unique scenario where your champions aren't necessarily crazy marketable to Americans, right? You've got, I believe, a Chinese champion.
She's probably the coolest chick on that whole roster.
But my point is, you're not going to see her. You're not going to see her in like a summer dress at a movie premiere, you know, dolled up to the chin, like you would.
She might get executed for that.
Easy, golly, Jess. So, it's just we're in a weird spot now where it feels like these women are marketable to American platforms. It doesn't necessarily mean they're not marketable from to their own home countries. They're probably enormous stars, but
oh, for sure,
we as Americans want our fighters to be the Juliana Peñas, right? Whether you like her or dislike her, you want her to have catchy takes and be on those television shows, getting those sound bites that you're watching on Twitter and either going, yeah, I'm going to root for her, or nah, you know what? I think she stinks and I want to see her get knocked out. There's not a lot of chicks that are bringing that type of presentation over, and it just makes the division seem bland and boring and plain. You know what I'm saying?
Let's be real too. Like us Americans, like we're fucking visual people. You know, like we don't read books anymore, right? Like we watch TV, you know, we listen to things, but you know, we're visual people. We want to watch things, and we want pretty people, right? Like I hate to say it like
No,
that, but
yeah,
it's the
you
fucking truth,
that's fair.
right? We
That is
want a
fair.
pretty champion, male and female. You know, that's who we're gonna root for. You know, that like you said, the one that shows up to the movie premiere in the summer in the nice dress, you know, showing off some skin. The dude who has like the 8-pack, you know, going on, like walking around the beach. Like those are the people that we want as champions, who we can watch them visually and be happy. And hopefully, if they're at that level of being a champion, then that just means that they're that good at their skill set. But it's hard to root for your lesser visual people. I'm just saying it's a dirty American thing, right? Like, I'm sorry, I'm a dirty American guy. Like, I'm just gonna say it. Like, that's how I feel. Like when I'm watching my, you know, my champions. You know, it's just the way it is.
No, it's fair. That's fair. It's I think that what you're saying is what a lot of people think, but won't share that opinion because they're afraid to get canceled or they're afraid of the pushback that comes with having that thought process. And I don't think there's I personally don't think there is anything wrong with going, I want my female champions to be a little bit more appealing to the eye. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, especially when the UFC has been pushing that
Oh,
type
yeah.
of product, give or
I
take
mean,
the
Paige
last
Van
7 or 8
Zandt, come
years.
on,
As long
folks.
as the division has been around, they've been going, let's doll up Rose. Let's
Well,
doll
look
up
at Johanna. Johanna
doll up
Champion.
Johanna.
Johanna Champion is one of the greatest women mixed martial, well, she's one of the greatest mixed martial artists to ever grace a cage or a ring. I'm just telling you, her striking, her grappling, her submit, she's all put together, and she was champion forever. But what did the UFC do? They said, man, it's hard to market you. You know? And so we're gonna take, you know, we're gonna take the Poland out of you and put a little bit more New York in you. And then that's what they did. All of a sudden now she's getting facelifts and like, you know, boob
No,
jobs and like,
no, that's
yeah,
fair.
that's what they did. So there's truth to that. And I'm not saying that I won't root for a G or, you know, whatever. Like I do, right? Because I love the sport. So I love it, you know, I love the
You can
competition
root
part.
for a fighter just because you're a fan of their skill
100%.
set. But when you get a boring, bland fight and a boring, bland championship matchup and the
Like we're about
result
to
from
talk
these
about.
two, no, that's just no, but I'm just saying this here specifically, it's gonna this is gonna be the cause and effect of it. We spent a lot of time on this
Yeah,
one, Jess, so we'll
we did.
keep
I'm
it
sorry.
moving.
My
I
bad.
mean, no, you're good. I'm in a, here's what I think you gotta do, bottom line. You gotta fucking break the bank to bring Nunes back. You've got to hope that Pena beats Pennington. And you've got to go, let's run Pena versus Nunes. That's the fucking fight to make. Now, you
Yeah.
mentioned Kayla Harrison, and Kayla Harrison is interesting because here's where I'm at with Kayla Harrison. I've watched the PFL fights where she's truly been challenged and she's lost those fights. She's lost that fight. I've also seen fights where I think that she's been challenged and I don't think she looks that great. To me, she's very Matt Hughes. She's not a great striker, but she's a next level grappler. And that will get you so far in the UFC. And we've
Yeah.
seen that time and time again, especially in the women's division, where it's like this woman is so dominant in grappling, but then she catches one knee to the temple, and then that's it, changes everything. This woman is such an amazing striker, and then she gets taken down and submitted, and then they're fucking, and here we are. So I don't know what they do with Harrison. And honestly, Jess, to go here, I would not be surprised if Holm knocked her out in that fucking fight at 300, because she's got to have a lot of pressure going into that first UFC fight, which happens
We
to
talk about it a
be,
lot.
which happens to be an enormous UFC event as is, where she's going to have to do interviews and all the press and all this shit that's at another level than what she's ever done in the PFL. As opposed to Holly, oh, this is her 25th UFC, and she's fought in all the biggest fights, and she's fought in the smallest venues as well. So this ain't shit to her, but another Saturday.
I do not think Holly Holm will win that fight, but I do understand that train of thought. She's a pro. She's a vet within the UFC cage, and we've seen plenty of top-rated talent come into the UFC, get fight number one, and lose due to UFC jitters. It happens.
Yeah, so that's honestly kind of what I think goes on here, personally. But let's keep it moving here, Jess. Let's get to the main football event. You mentioned it.
Oh no, we got main event. See, I'm so over it.
Like, one more. Well, I know. Well, listen, we'll try and tighten this one up because we did what we do, which is we just kind of went down a lane and just kept driving and then got lost and turned the car around. We didn't turn the car around quick enough.
No, we're not.
Okay. Strickland, DDP. We both like DDP. We thought DDP would get a stoppage. I do want to give Sean Strickland credit here. I forgot. Sean Strickland does a good job of pacing himself in longer fights. He's done a good job of pacing himself in these five-round fights. With that said, Jess, I believe my initial scorecard, I gave him one round. I just didn't think he did a lot. I do want to say this. I understand the thought process of people thinking that Strickland won because those first two rounds were pretty close. I was watching this fight with probably three or four people who I've watched dozens, if not more, fights with, and there was really no one in the room that was picking Sean Strickland except one dude who had money on him. Everybody scoring the fight went. Everybody scoring the fight went. Sean lost that round. Sean lost that round. Sean lost that round. And after the third round, I made sure to survey a few of my boys and go, hey, we all understand. We're all on the same page. Those first two rounds were really close, but I thought that DDP won. And across the room, everyone was saying the same thing. And this wasn't just that, oh, we want to see Sean Strickland lose because he's a racist, possibly. I thought that this fight wasn't the fireworks that we were hoping it would be. It was kind of a wash, rinse, repeat. Strickland staying on the outside and just pawn a jab, pawn a jab, pawn a jab. And DDP just trying to get up and around it and throw those awkward-ass shots. He throws awkward punches that tend to land like on the top of your head and above your nose. So it doesn't seem like he's trying to punch you in the jaw. It seems to me like he's just trying to punch you anywhere in the head that he can. It's very George Foreman-esque, if you ask me. I don't need to hit a target. I just need to hit you. I thought other than the fifth round, the fight was kind of a wash. It wasn't necessarily exciting. There was just a lot of circling and cage. What do you call it? I don't know the word I'm looking for here. I don't want to say generalship, but just a lot of, you know, maybe a level of above a glorified sparring match. Give me some thoughts on this, Jeff.
It was okay. So it wasn't boring, right? Like, there was action. It just didn't seem like the action went anywhere.
That's a great point. That's a great way to put it.
Oh, I'm so glad you agree, because like, I was having difficulty talking to some buddies about this fight. They're like, oh man, this fight sucked. I was like, well, it kind of didn't, but it just didn't do anything. Like,
I think the way that we thought it, like on paper versus how it went down, were two different fights.
Well, so again, I'm sitting there blowing DDP last week. He's the next megastar. He's this guy that, and he could be. Okay, I don't want to take all that away.
Styles make fun.
Sean Strickland, by the way, is also a very awkward striker. So now you have two very awkward strikers, both striking and mostly striking at each other, throwing a bunch of weird ass shots, and a lot of them landed. That's why I'm so confused by this fight, because both those dudes look beat up. DDP had to go have his eye cut open and sewed back together. Like,
after that fight.
Yeah, if you look at the fighters, you're like, okay, so Strickland definitely took some damage. DDP looks like he got kicked in the face by a horse. Yeah. Like, how is this guy winning? But if you go back, he got a hoof straight to the face, man. I'm telling you, the dome is crushed. If you go back and you watch the fight, you're like, well, shit, man, DDP landed a lot of shots. Like,
it just seemed to me like as I'm scoring the fight, it seemed like DDP landed slightly more heavier punches as opposed to Sean, who was just jabbing, lots of jabs. jabbing, moving.
Same with the easy fight.
He threw a kick, jabbing, staying on the outside. It just seemed like he wasn't really willing to engage which is what we were looking for. When he was fighting Israel, there came a point where he's like, motherfucker, I'm trying to engage, and you are backpedaling. This fight, it just seemed like, no, I'm fine, just jabbing and circling, jabbing and circling, jabbing and circling.
I got one thing to say about Sean is potentially, I'm not saying it happened, but potentially, he had that first-time champion jitter where you don't want to lose the belt now. You just want it. You've had it for like a couple of months. Like, it's not like Sean's had it for a long time. And now you're fighting a guy who you know everyone's rooting for. You know that Vegas wants to win. You know that the UFC, your bosses, probably want him to win.
Yeah, that's tricky.
And you don't want – so what I saw from Sean is exactly what you're describing, a lot of standing on the outside, a lot of jabs. Like, he'd do his 1-2 kick, 1-2 kick kind of thing. Like, there wasn't a lot of explosion. It felt to me like he was just simply trying to not lose the fight.
That's fair. That's a very fair assessment. I just think at some point you've got to apply more pressure and you've got to put your foot a little bit more on the acceleration. And you can't just sit there and go, well, I'm the champion. You've got to take the belt for me. So I'm just going to jab my way through 5 rounds, jab for the first 4 rounds. And then in the 5th round, I'm going to really engage with you. In the 5th round, I'm going to bite down on my mouthpiece and point in the middle of the cage and go, let's fucking go. That shit came way too late. And
100%.
And maybe if Strickland does that in the 3rd round instead of the 5th, you go, well, damn, he won that 3rd round convincingly. Damn, he won that 4th round convincingly. Damn, he won that 5th round convincingly. You got to give it to him just because he really put his foot a little bit more on the gas and was able to really beat DDP up. It seemed to me, again, that when they were really getting into the exchanges, that DDP was just doing a little bit more, throwing the weird hooks from the left side, throwing the weird hooks from the right side, throwing fish hooks, throwing kicks. He just did a little bit more for me, yeah, for my liking. And again, in a room full of probably 6-7 dudes that were all paying attention to the fight, and I don't think one person scored that fight 3-2 for Sean. Even the dude that was betting on him was like, yeah, well. So, I think a lot of the pushback that we were seeing on social media were from the sour grapes Sean Strickland fans or the people that lost money.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. But in your opinion, what's next for Sean? I don't know. What do you think happens with Sean?
I would love to see a rematch with Izzy, and I know that's not happening. It just doesn't make sense to do that right now. But I would love to see that rematch with Izzy. I hate for them to go, let's do that in 2025. You know, I would love for them to do that sooner than later. I'm not sure how the rankings work and who's in that top four or top five right now at 170. I think the door is kind of, or I'm sorry, is it 185 or 170? I think that door's rotated pretty hard here. Might be one of those like Ankalevs or someone like that's lurking in the background, one of those cats. But
yeah,
I don't know if you have top four, top five in front of you, Jess, but I'm not sure what's next. But from a personal standpoint, I would love for Israel's first fight back to be that fight and not necessarily DDP, because that to me feels like a fight that is the fight that got away from Israel. And I think a Styles make fights thing. And I think if they fought 4 or 5 times that Israel's going to win that fight more than lose it. So that's the fight I'd like to see. Just more, I guess, more from an Israel fan standpoint and less from a, what's best for Sean's career type standpoint. For Sean, it'll be interesting, and you brought up a good point here, Jess, and then we'll jump into football after this. I think you brought up a good point, which is the way you fight to get to the championship as opposed to the way you fight once you are the champion. And I think the pressure of, I like being champ, and I like the perks that come with the champ, and oh shit, I don't want to lose those. I better do whatever I can to remain the champ. And in doing so, maybe you didn't fight with that same hunger that got you into the championship fight that got you knocking Israel out, hurting Israel and doing things that we hadn't seen before. So I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with him in the next 3 months, 6 months, what fight they set up for him. And one more thing, just before we get out of here, I am also in agreement with you. I think the UFC as a company does not want a guy that's going to fly off the fucking handle with wild comments as their champion. They want all their champions like DDP. I'm sorry, like DDP. Like GSP.
Yes.
They want all their champions buttoned up, looking nice in suits, being able to go to Disney Plus premieres and take nice photos. They want their champions to look like champions. They don't want their champions saying a bunch of dumb shit. And would you really be surprised, Jesse, if Dana's backstage telling him, hey, man, I agree with everything you're fucking saying. However, I don't say that shit into a microphone because I like my job and the benefits and the perks that come with it.
Well, that's the difference between being the owner of a company and, or, you know, where Dana is at, his spot, right? It's being Dana and then being Sean. Like, let's be real. Dana probably does tell him, Sean. He's
a public figure.
He's like, Sean, like, I love you, dude. Like, you're a fantastic fighter. You're conservative. You're a Trumper like me. Like, you know, let's go get him. But hey, man, can you slow the fuck down on the mic? Like, you're killing me, you know. And I, you know, do you want to, like you said, do you want a champion wearing the nice suit, right, fitted, everything's nice and tucked away, everything looks good, or do you want the champion holding the belt with a Pabst blue ribbon in one hand and a shirt that says "The Man, the Myth, the Legend" with the arrow pointing down? Where, you know what I mean? Like, that's Sean Strickland.
I mean, so, I like the shirt. And again, I'm sure Dana's like, listen, I'm all about grab him by the pussy. However, I can't say that into a microphone. Like,
100% into a microphone.
I gotta keep it tight. Again, you are now the representative of a brand, and in doing so, you've gotta be able to represent that brand cleanly. You do. It's just, that's where it's at. All right, Jess, enough with the UFC. Listen, our combat sports has went about 45 minutes here, guys, so we hope you enjoyed. Let's hop into some NFL here, Jess. I believe, yes. Unless there's anything I'm missing.
No.
Let us go game by game. Jess, you did the thing. You wiggled on me. On last week's recording, you said I'm all in on Baltimore. I think Baltimore wins. I don't remember if you thought they'd cover or not. And then at some point, like Thursday or Friday, you started going hard Texans. Like, you just did a hard
slant. I did.
And you're like, nah, you know what? I'm drinking the Texans Kool-Aid. I think Baltimore's whack. I think they're beatable. And I'm all in on the Texans. And for a half, you looked like you were on the money. For a half, it was like they were in it. And then that second half, it just absolutely got away from the Texans. That tends to happen when you don't have Joe Flacco on the other side giving you 14 points on two turnovers. A few seconds, if you will, yes, on this game.
It also just shows the level of coaching, right? John is one of the greatest coaches of all time. Jim is also, like, the Harbaughs know how to coach. John's got the
coaching tree.
The tree is strong. D'Amico Ryans has done a fantastic, fantastic job with this Houston Texans football team, with all the youngsters on that team, you know, the aged out vets that nobody wanted. And to get where they got is absolutely commendable. But you run into a situation where you're on the road. The weather's not terrible, but it's not great. Lamar Jackson and company are used to playing in that weather. The Houston Texans are used to playing in a dome. And then you got C.J. Stroud, who better, like, run away with Offensive Rookie of the Year. You know, his first ever playoff game. And I think that the second half, when things get tight, when the adjustments get made on the defensive side of the ball, and then the offense just isn't prepared for it. As a rookie quarterback, your thinking is slowed down. You're not Tom Brady in year 10, you know, thinking like within milliseconds of what play you're going to call, what play you're going to run. You're taking a few extra seconds to ponder things, and that really hurt CJ in the second half. Baltimore just proved that by far and large, they were the better team that day.
Mm-hmm. I'm eating a cookie. I'm trying to swallow it. Coaching adjustments, they happen at halftime. And as you mentioned, one coach is from an incredible tree. I believe the other coach is as well, but he just got smoked with those adjustments.
Yeah.
Game two, very interesting, Jeff. the Niners and Green Bay. You know, I do want to say this before I give you the floor. There were about 5 minutes left in that game. And once again, I'm sitting in a room full of guys. Some of these guys are coaches at whatever level. And these guys are all saying, the Niners are about to lose this game. Holy shit. There's a room full of dudes going, the Niners are about to choke this game away. Also, with three Cowboys fans, other than myself, and we're all going, hey, you know, maybe McCarthy's not that bad. I mean, this guy's out-coached, he out-coached McCarthy, he out-coached Shanahan. Like, maybe keeping McCarthy's the right thing to do. I mean, they're about to go to the NFC Championship. Green Bay misses that field goal, and all of a sudden, the Niners just have a pulse. The enormous pendulum swing, the crowd's back in. Purdy puts a few things together. Give me a few thoughts on this game.
Yeah, so Brock Purdy wasn't pretty the whole entire game. But the key thing that I took was the final drive. Now, albeit, like, people are going to be like, well, if the Packers didn't, you know, if they didn't miss those field goals. Yeah, that's true. If they didn't, but you know what? They did. So you can't take that back. Like, they missed. Niners capitalized. That's just the way it goes. That final drive was very, very telling of the type of player that Brock Purdy is. He's heard all the negativity. He's heard the Mr. Irrelevancy. He's heard that I'm a system quarterback. He heard every bit of it. You know what he did? He drove a game-winning drive to get the San Francisco 49ers into the NFC Championship game. That is all I wanted. That's the only thing I'm taking away from the Brock Purdy stuff. On the other side of the ball, Jordan Love's a baller. Jordan Love is a straight-up baller. And next year, with a few extra talented receivers and offensive pieces on that team, and then hopefully they don't lose Jair. If Jair leaves, that defense is going to be kind of wrecked. But with a few extra pieces, I'm telling you, Jordan Love is going to be a top, probably eight quarterback in the league next year too. Packers are in good hands. The 49ers are in good hands. It was a fantastic fucking game. And you know what? Sometimes you just got more pieces than the other team does, and San Francisco just had more pieces.
Are we going to give Love a pass for throwing that absolute shit ball? I think it was like a first down.
I believe it was very similar to Baker Mayfield's pass. Just trying to make that thing happen, right? You're in panic mode. You're trying to get back down the field. You're trying to get a score. You're trying to put points up. And sometimes when you're a quarterback, especially like when your vision is low on the field, and that tense, you're tense, man, you're stressed. That shit bothers you. And then sometimes you try to make a play that looks good, but to everyone else, we're all like, why the fuck did he throw that football? And that was what Jordan Love did.
The old Brett Favre, throw it across your body to the other side of the field and just kind of hope for the best.
You know, it didn't work all the time for him either. So
this is a very good point. We're going to pick on Josh Allen and that second Nate pass that he missed.
Yeah,
the same way that everybody else
defend
has.
It.
The same way that everybody else it. Has, right? But let me say this. Equal opportunity pick on here. That was a shitty throw. And I know it's easier for me to say sitting at my fucking desk here. But I don't understand how you don't throw that one away. I don't understand how you don't throw that one at somebody's feet. I don't know how you don't sell that one out of bounds. I get you're trying to make a play, but you've been so cool the last 6-8 weeks down the stretch.
Yeah.
Your football IQ was off the charts against our defense. Why? What happened? Like, where's the brain fart?
That's the only thing I can call it is a brain fart.
Like, what's the brain fart that happens here that makes you throw this absolute stinker of a ball in the rain, by the way?
When he threw it,
Everybody says, oh no.
Like, so me and my buddies, we're at work and a buddy was streaming it on his phone. So we're watching it. And I'm like, as soon as he turned, like, I swear to God, I was like, he's going to just run out of bounds, right? That's what I thought he was going to try to do. Just run out of bounds, stop the clock. And then he turns, and I was in my head, I'm like, oh my God, he's going to throw it across his body.
Yes.
And then he fucking did. And my buddy's a hardcore Packers fan, right? So he's like, oh my God, I'm like, in my head, I'm like, that's not a good decision. My buddy's over here freaking out, like thinking, you know, it's fucking Patrick Mahomes throwing this football. And then of course the interception happens and he's just crushed. And I'm just like, I can't believe he threw that like across his body. He threw that bitch like 50 yards from like one side of the field to the other
Everything
across
back.
his body. Oh, so much bad.
Yeah, I, you know, again, I get the, hey, they're gonna be great. They're, you know, they're young, all that. With that said, my man does not get a pass for throwing that ball, and neither would Josh Allen when we pick on him in a while.
It
All
was a
right,
bad pass.
next game, and I'll be honest with you, Jess, I was so fired up for this Bills KC game. I strategically planned a nap during this early game so I could be fully up and functional and rested and focused on the KC game. So I missed half of Lions, Rams, but once again, bro coach has risen from the ashes like a phoenix and is one of the final coaches standing, which is just mind-blowing to me. You know, we made sure to give him a shout out
Love
on
bro
Twitter
coach.
because we just love the guy. We've said nothing every week. We make it a point to let y'all know we are
I
pro
seriously
bro
I want to
coach.
run a campaign to get him to say on live TV hashtag swollen out of control. Like I just
I mean, let's get him enough, get him more caffeine.
I'm gonna find
He's
him a
down.
t-shirt. I'm gonna find him an old like Dad of the Sports Show t-shirt. I'm gonna send it to him.
Oh, there you go. Fine.
Just
Can
be
we
like, please, like
just reprint?
you don't have to give me shit, coach. Just
Just wear this. And know that we love you. And we are day one supporters. Yeet.
bro, coach, yeet.
All right. So give me your thoughts on this game.
Bills KC game. It was
No, no, no,
similar
no, no.
to,
Rams,
oh,
Rams.
Rams Lions. It was a great game. You have
Rams stuck
Stafford.
around.
You have Stafford and Goff. You know what I mean? The difference came down to wait. We're talking Bucks Rams or
Oh, I'm
Bucks
sorry.
Lions?
Yeah,
Bucks
I'm so
Lions.
sorry. I blew it.
Mayfield.
I'm already discounting
Yeah,
Baker Mayfield.
Mayfield. Yeah, Mayfield played out of his mind for a half of football, and he like it was back and forth, score for score, score for score. What it basically came down to is just like the Jordan Love pass across. I mean, Baker's wasn't as bad, right? But it was still pretty bad. And I am trying to give Baker credit because he got to a damn divisional game, so playoff game. The pass that he had when they were driving, I don't understand why he threw that pass because from my fan eyes, I saw three defenders hovering around the ball. Like
I think we all did.
I couldn't even
I mean,
see. I
two
couldn't
in
even
the
see the
vicinity,
receiver
you
he
can
was trying to
safely.
throw to. He was smothered in Detroit white and blue. Like I couldn't even see a Buccaneer. And then he throws that pass and it gets picked off, obviously. But I got to give credit though to the Buccaneers because just like the Rams, I did not expect them to even sniff the playoffs this year. And both teams made it to, you know, Rams got to the wild card before they lost to the Lions, and then the Bucs get to the divisional game before they lost to the Lions also. No shame losing to bro coaches, Detroit Lions. Detroit Lions look good. Goff look good. They have one very important weapon that is almost unstoppable, and that is Sam fucking Laporta, that big giant behemoth of a tight end that they have, who can catch anything and everything. He could very well be going on to be the next Gronk. I mean, he is such a good football player,
Did the
and
Lions just sign somebody too? Who did they just sign? Zach Ertz.
They just signed Zach Ertz too, which I think is really weird. I think that maybe like a little love tap sign. Like they're like, hey, buddy, we might go to the Super Bowl. You know, it'd be cool if you went to a Super Bowl one time
Well,
in your career.
Laporta's
I don't know.
banged up too, so there's
Yeah.
gotta be
Well, when you
some of
get past 225 fucking times a game, man, you're gonna get a little bit banged up. Amon-Ra St.
Knees are gonna be a
Brown.
little sore.
I love Amon-Ra St. Brown. I think he's a phenomenal man and he's a phenomenal player. I think they I can't remember the kid's name that he had a kickoff return in that game. Basically a nobody, but like, you know, they just got these dudes. Bro coach just coaches these dudes up. Like he's
So he
you know, straight
does.
up man to man. He knows how to get through to these young men, and he just does, man. He coaches them up. Shout out also to Penei Sewell, University of Oregon, baby, go Ducks. You know, one of the best outside linemen in the league. I don't think that he even let up a sack this season. Guy's a monster. Brokoch and the Lions played a really good game, and Jared Goff was very efficient with the football.
Yeah, again, didn't watch a ton of this game because I tried to nap it out, missed the majority of it. We've given Baker so many flowers the last month, 6 weeks. So be interesting to see where he lands next year, whether Tampa Bay says
he's getting paid.
Or he won't. I think, honestly, I want to say he gets paid. It sounds like a good story to say he finally gets paid, especially with the shit that he dealt with this year where, like, he got ripped off or something like that, he, like, lost millions. But right. I think there's going to be a weird thing where there's going to be a rush for dudes like Justin Fields. There's going to be a rush for dudes like Cousins. Excuse me. And then there's going to be that second, third-tier market. You know, Garoppolo's going to get traded. This guy's going to get traded. Somebody else, Young's going to get traded. So it's going to get weird to see when everything shakes out. And also what Tampa Bay does. Do they draft a quarterback? Who knows? But it'll be interesting ultimately to see where everything just kind of lands with Baker. I hope that the guys like Evans and Godwin and these guys go to the GM and say, hey, we like Baker a lot. What is he going to do? What are we going to do to keep him? We want to keep him here. We think he's a gamer. We think we can do things with him. Bring back some of those defensive pieces, and the South Soy is going to be shaky. We think we can do something here. But it'll be interesting to see the ultimate shakeout. Yeah. All right, Jess, we've hit that game. We've got one game left, the primetime game, the game that did the biggest number other than the Super Bowl in like the last 20 years. I'm talking KC Buffalo. Absolute knockout, drag out. There came a point where it felt like it just went, okay, the defenses are just stopped playing, and now we're getting that Madden, everyone scoring. You're either getting a field goal or a touchdown here. Give me the scratch the surface thoughts here before we get too deep.
Yeah, so scratch the surface thoughts on the Bills Chiefs game is this came down to coaching. Sean McDermott coached a fantastic first half against Andy Reid. And then in the second half, he coached not against Andy Reid, not against Patrick Mahomes, not even against the Chiefs. Sean McDermott decided to coach against the time clock. And that is not how you win playoff football. Andy Reid made second half adjustments to stop the run and play strong interior defense. And they did. They decided to put a lot of pressure on Josh Allen, knowing full well that he can escape the pressure and move and get yards and move the chains. But that was the choice that Andy Reid made. Sean McDermott's choice was to continue to run against a brick wall for an entire half and not do anything and even allow Josh to really use his arm or his athleticism as much as in the first half. So to me, coaching, that was the difference.
I think that's fair. So with the first half, it felt kind of like a wash. They were going back and forth, but it was close. The second half, it got really interesting. And it felt like, from my perspective, one, Buffalo could not stop a nosebleed. They were just having problems on the defensive end getting those stops. And what was the – was it Rice? Is it the Rice thing, running back's name? What's the kid's name again?
Isaiah Pacheco.
Yeah,
Pacheco is like running fucking freight train.
They could not stop him. It felt like he was getting 6, 8, 10 yards every single time he was.
I think he literally averaged 5.8 yards a carry.
You had the Kelce game, which is just – I mean – you know, we always talk about how we talked so much about Belichick this year, and Belichick's best thing was, I am going to neutralize whatever your best weapon is, and you're going to have to beat us by going around whatever your best weapon is. Now, I don't understand how, if you are a Buffalo Bills defense, you know, schematically, how you don't go, all right, we're just taking Kelce out, and if those receivers beat us, so be it. But, you know, Kelce just had so many big grabs when it mattered. It was just – it was messy. But that second half, I think you've got a great point. You look at the fake punt. And you might know more than this than me, Jesse, but I believe there were only 10 men on the field for Kansas City, and that's why Buffalo thought it was worth taking that risk. Is that what happened? Or they just thought, let's just pull something out of our ass and see and hope it works?
The fake punt. So the fake punt was one of the biggest coaching mistakes. Obviously, if you punt you run the risk of your defense allowing another long drive, more time to get taken off the clock, and you haven't stopped KC. So, I mean, I think that KC punted one time, and that was kind of on their own admission, right? Like, yeah, they had kind of had some penalties and they fucked up, right? But other than that, it was like field goal, touchdown, 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 touchdown. And there would have been four straight touchdowns if Mecole Hardman doesn't fumble. Yep. Into the
enormous
end zone. Big, what I thought, and you did as well, and most of other anybody in Erie County, Buffalo, New York, probably thought, fuck, this is the swinging point. This is when we take this game and put a nail in the coffin. But the fake punt was a huge disaster. And then people tried to turn it into, well, they wanted DeMar Hamlin to play in the playoffs. And so they, you know, bullshit, man. McDermott got cute.
Yeah, I agree.
That's what it is. McDermott got cute. He thought he would pull some shit. The motherfucker, it's like 4th and 7. And you're punting, which means you're even further back. And it was just, it was such a terrible thing. And obviously, you know, it helped that they got the turnover, you know, in anyway. But like, it was just, you punt and you play your defense, which is, for the most part, this whole entire season been Buffalo's strength. Led the league in turnovers and takeaways, you know, top three, top four, something like that in total defense. You play your defense. I know they've not been playing that great. And I know that you're playing the JV water boy at middle linebacker because everybody else is hurt. But you got to play to your strength, man. That, to me, again, goes to show coaching. He coached. And I hate to use this word because McDermott's a grown-ass fucking man, but he kind of coached scared.
Tough one. Tough one across the board. And I think that you do have a very great point there that they may have just been outcoached when things got tight late. We get to the fourth quarter, and I mean, and Josh has been great this game, so I hate the picking on Josh thing here, but I mean, it's going to come.
There's some fucking bias, I'm telling you.
So when you look at that specific second down, right? And again, I know it's been replayed for a fucking week, 4 or 5 days in a row now. What do you see, Jess? Do you see Josh possibly being able to see Diggs open on the slant route, or maybe he can't see him because there's pressure coming from that same side? Do you think him being bumped made him rush the throw, and that's the reason the throw was bad? Again, I know we've seen him make that throw to Gabe Davis so many times against his Kansas City team, but give me some thoughts on that.
So that whole entire play, and obviously I could be very wrong, but I think that Josh lost confidence in what the defense could do. He lost confidence in some of what his receivers could do because there were multiple drops that game leading up to that point, right? Mm-hmm. So the one guy that Josh had confidence in was Khalil Shakir, who had made a few really tough catches, including the touchdown earlier where he kind of swung back. Josh had to run around the left side and kind of toss that in, right? I think that he thought, I have to score, this game's over. I can't just throw a first down. I can't just toss it over the middle. And yes, he went absolute hero ball. But in my opinion, with the way that game was going, he had to try to make that pass. He had to. And I'm not going to discredit, like, there's a lot of more talented and uber educated people than I am making this call saying, well, Josh, obviously, according to analytics, should have just thrown to Diggs and got that first down. Well, the defense of Kansas City had already been basically shutting Buffalo down in the second half. Buffalo hadn't had many first downs. They hadn't really scored a lot of points. And I think that for Josh Allen to look across Diggs and try to – and you know what? If Chris Jones' big, strong ass doesn't push Deion Dawkins into Josh, mm-hmm. Josh throws a dime, and that's caught in the back of the end zone by Shakir for 6. I would put my retirement on that shit because I've seen Josh make that throw, and Khalil Shakir is not dropping that pass, and he's got steps in front of his defender. So, yes, there was like a multitude of things that just kind of happened, right? Like you have, you know, the pressure.
The big miss by Diggs. Let's not just breeze by that because everyone else is touching it. Enormous miss by Diggs.
That pass, by the way, it's been looked at 100 times also. And I don't know how to read it on Diggs's part, right? Because we've seen him make tougher catches, right?
Yep.
But from the spot that Josh threw the football to the spot where it hit him in the hands was 65 yards. A 65-yard pass on a fucking rope in the hands, that I'm telling you, only two or three quarterbacks in the history of the league can make that throw. Josh made that throw. It should have been caught, and it wasn't. And there's one thing that sort of irks me is that when Diggs dropped it and he was walking away, he did the, like, you know, the almost got there, you know, with his fingers. He was like, ah, that close. That kind of irked me, man, because I'm like, this is a big-ass fucking game. Like, that, like, oh, almost caught it. It should have been a catch. I mean, I don't know if he would have broke away for a score, but they would have been within, you know, the red zone at least.
Yeah. Even if he doesn't, even if he doesn't score, that's an enormous catch. It's a game-changing catch. Yeah.
Last few thoughts on this game is I think Josh Allen played a phenomenal last 8 weeks of fucking football. All the way from Kansas City, the Kadarius Toney foot over the line, all the way through, you know, ending up winning the AFC East, beating the Miami Dolphins in week 17 or week 18. Going on to, you know, to win their wild card game against the Steelers. And then even in this game, Josh Allen played amazing football and made every single attempt a quarterback can possibly do to win a football game. And I'm not going to sit here and put blame everywhere else. I think that it was a collective thing. Like you and I were talking about, right? Like Buffalo probably shouldn't have been 6-6.
Mm-hmm.
They probably should have been, you know, fucking, you know, 11-1 or something.
It's just, again, it's just such a tough pull. And I think, again, same with my Cowboys. We do the hindsight 2020 stuff. I hate, and I know it's impossible for you to miss this now, the hot take of the window has closed for Buffalo. Because I think as long as you have Josh Allen, the window's open. Of course, it's just about surrounding him with the right talent. And at the end of the day, it's easy for us to say, Bass makes that field goal. Kansas City goes down and scores.
Because I think that they do.
It's all oblivious. And I do too. But we'll never know because the field goal is missing. And it's easy for us to say that. It's also easy to say, who knows if Mahomes goes out there, slips on a fucking banana peel and throws an INT. You know what I mean? Who knows if he doesn't go out there, trip on himself, throw a fucking bad ball, and it fails and it gets intercepted. Like, we need that closure that you'll never get as a Bills fan, unfortunately. Yeah.
But I do agree with you. I don't, I know that, you know, media folks out there, you know, like your Ryan Clarks, who, you know, I, you know, if you want to know my feelings on that guy, you go to my Twitter and look at that shit. Nick Wright. I think that these are very smart, intelligent men, right? But I think that they're making bad decisions with who they're painting to be the villain. And I do believe I love the Chiefs, man. I'm not even gonna lie about it. Like, I love the Chiefs. I love the atmosphere. I love the coach. Patrick Mahomes is amazing. Obviously, two Super Bowls, got a bunch of MVPs. I even kind of like Travis Kelce, and I mean, the Taylor Swift thing drives me fucking bonkers because I think it takes away from the football game at times. But I mean, that's what it is, right? And the winning culture in KC is great. But to say the window is closed in Buffalo is ridiculous. Josh Allen will be going into year 7. He's got 3 to 4 really good years left, 5 to 6, you know, good years left. The window is not closed. What Diggs is not going nowhere. You know what I mean? We will find another receiver either in free agency or the draft. And I believe that Khalil Shakir is probably the next big guy up, man. This kid he's talented. You got Kincaid and Knox. Hell, you can trade Knox. I'm not saying I want him traded, but you can and probably get something out of him. Bean is the wizard when it comes to trades and getting draft picks and all this other stuff. And yes, we are $50 million over the cap going into this season. Yikes. But with a few restructuring, I guarantee you Josh's contract gets restructured. That's going to get money back. Probably restructure a couple other contracts. I don't foresee Von Miller coming back next season. There's a couple other guys that won't be back. And I think the Buffalo will be, you know, they won't be sitting pretty. but I think that they'll be back in the playoff form next season.
Let's move to the next games here, Jess. Let's keep it moving. We've got three games left to gamble on this season. Let's talk about two of them here. We'll start with the early game as I'm pulling up those stats and stalling. The early game, it looks like KC Baltimore. That's going to be a 3.5 point favorite at Baltimore, and that is for Baltimore. A bit surprising to me, but also not. I'm not. It seems to me like Vegas respects Mahomes and the Chiefs so much that they're not going to throw like a 6 or a 7 here. Who you got?
This game, I'm telling you, it's a flip of the coin. But because we don't push on this show, I'm going to go with the Baltimore Ravens. I don't think that Mahomes' receivers can do what they did to Buffalo 2 games in a row.
Wasn't even the receivers. It was more the running back.
Their receivers were catching. None of their receivers dropped passes. Mecole Hardman had the unfortunate fumble, but what's his name? MVS, Valdez Scantling. Yeah. I ain't never seen him catches like that. I mean, I'm used to seeing him drop. He's stone cold hands.
My man was alive.
So, I mean, you got receivers, Rashee Rice, the rookie, he's making plays. Travis Kelce, obviously making plays. And MVS making plays down the field. It's stuff that I'm not used to seeing Mahomes receivers do. And I just don't think that they can do it again. And I'll be honest, man, the defense, Baltimore's defense is different, man. Their linebackers, where we were weak at the linebacker position, playing AJ Klein fresh out of, you know, vacationing in his motorhome last week, you know, like they got Roquan fucking Smith. You know what I mean? They got Patrick Queen. Like, these guys are no jokes. And I don't believe that their corners are that great. But the receivers of KC is not that great either. I'm taking Baltimore in the points.
I've spent pretty much since Sunday night going, am I really going to pick against Mahomes? That's just really what it comes down to for me. Am I really – like, I know Baltimore is better, 53-man roster versus 53-man roster. I know the coaches are kind of a wash because they're both – great coaches.
Yes.
One's won Super Bowls, the other hasn't, but they're still great coaches. I don't think anyone schematically is getting over anyone in this game. To me, and then of course, I mean, we've been blowing Lamar all year. I've been telling you he's MVP since November. So I'm gonna take Baltimore. I don't love it, and I'm not taking the points. I think that Baltimore is gonna win by a point or two. I want to confidently say Baltimore wins this by a touchdown, but I can't. I just can't. And this just, to me, reeks of Baltimore has a turnover or two, and that's the difference. And I'm talking about turning the ball over. And so now KC has an extra possession or two, and it's 17-20 late, and we're all just looking at each other going, fuck, Mahomes is going to do this again. I'm going against my gut because my gut is telling me Mahomes is going to fuck around and win this game. And I'm going to try and use logic and go, once again, they're the better team. They're the better roster. And some would argue this season, the better quarterback. I'm going Ravens win. I think Kansas City covers. This feels like a 2-point game to me.
It's going to be a good game.
Bro coach
time.
7-point dog across the board to the San Francisco 49ers. The 49ers are at home. Jess, who you got?
My heart says to go bro coach in Detroit, and they cover. But
our hearts and our guts are really just leading us all over the place today.
They are leading us all over the place. My gut says San Francisco's defense finds a way to get a pick or two on Goff. They stop Jahmyr Gibbs for the most part. And Brock Purdy is steady and plays well. It's you know, it's going to be a very systematic. I know I just got done saying, you know, like, give Purdy his props, right? Give him his fucking roses. But, I mean, all he has to do is stay within the lines, right? Like, it, don't go and color outside the lines, Brock, and you win this game. I think the 49ers win. What's the spread?
Seven.
I don't love the spread.
Me neither. Me neither.
God, that hurts me to. I'm gonna say that they cover.
Nah.
I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna say that they cover, but I do not love that one bit.
This was tough. Can we name this week's show "Mahomes is in our guts"?
It's happening. Thank you. It's happening.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm with you. I like the Niners to win. I like a backdoor cover. I like the Lions on a backdoor where they're down 10 and they get a touchdown late to cut it to 3 and they just can't stop San Francisco with like 4 or 5 minutes left in the ball. They just go healthy dose of elaborate schemes to get McCaffrey the ball. I like the Niners. I like Detroit to cover, and I'm with you, Jeff. My gut says don't count the Lions out for some reason. After seeing that debacle last week with San Francisco, I don't know if it's going to rain this week in San Francisco. And I was of the belief that a lot of the balls that got away from Purdy were just the guy throwing in a rainstorm, and he's not, and it's an issue. Plus, you take away Debo, and that's a big deal too, Jess. Like,
that is a big deal.
No Debo this week. I mean, you take away one of, if not his second biggest weapon. That's tough. But let's stick with where we're at. All right, I like Niners.
Yes.
I like the Lions to cover. Jess, we said we'd do an hour. We went well over once again.
Yes,
that's what we do. Quick plugs, or do we do the plugs early?
No, we did most of the plugs at the beginning. Last plug is the biggest plug. I just want to say shout out to Variety Sports Network for supporting us all of last year, and now we're heading into 2024. I think it's going to be a good thing.
Yes,
follow them on Twitter at @variety_sports_, and then follow the show, right? The pod on Twitter is TeamToss21. We're getting up there, man. We're super close. I'm firm belief that we're going to hit over the 1K mark at some point in time here pretty soon. Follow Jason at Valdez spelled backwards, okay? Like, literally spell it backwards, and then add 559 at the end. And then follow me at JTT_81, and then that's it for us. Folks, thanks for listening to the show. Spotify listeners, again, big shout out to you. We appreciate you all.
Peace, God.